just getting all my sillies in. You know, I need to...
You have to get them out.
No, I need to bring them.
Don't get them in.
I need to bring my sillies in so we can start the podcast. God.
For those of you that don't know, it's quite difficult to get Kieran to sit completely still for the length of time it takes to record this.
Oh, I hate sitting still.
He is naturally very noisy and very fidgety. So this is quite a feat of engineering that you can actually hear us speak at any point.
Yeah. And it actually scraps me to this chair. For the penultimate episode
of the Generally Spooky podcast.
Is that where I am?
Episode 9. We've nearly made a whole season. Can you believe that?
I know, that's exciting. I'm pretty sure we crossed 1,000 downloads.
Wow.
That's exciting. So thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Yeah.
And we talked about it last night, but I'm going to be so proud and so happy when we just have a whole 10-episode season that's come out every Friday, consistently, for 10 weeks. And that's a big achievement.
That is. That's a big deal.
For people who've never done it before.
I'm proud. I'm proud of us.
I'm proud of us, too. It's been a lot of work.
Especially with how much research and writing you need to do pre-episode. Because it comes off very smooth and casual, but you put a lot of work in behind the scenes.
I do. Lots of late nights.
Yeah.
And panic. I always panic before we record because mm-hmm. I finish everything and then I'm convinced that it's all terrible and that I need to find another episode. And then we record it and it's usually a lot better than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think it always goes well. People are still listening. That's the main thing.
Well, that's the main indicator, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. The only problem, no contact from Sam Hewen yet.
No! Stop it.
This is 9 weeks we've been live, almost. Or will be once this comes out. Still nothing from him, nothing from his publicist. No.
You seem genuinely offended.
No bottle of, I forgot, Sassenach whiskey.
Isn't this how we ended the last episode?
I do believe I brought it up again.
What? What are you doing? Do you have an axe to grind?
Shitting a bit. Trolling you, that's...
And that is always your main goal.
Yeah, that's the aim here. I'm just here ironically.
Ugh, don't. Don't.
Well.
You want to get into it?
I do.
You want to start?
Let's start. Now, I know this week's episode.
Yes, I had a bit of a crisis this week. Partly because we've been very pushed for time. The turnaround for this episode is super quick. Embarrassingly quick.
Or fast as yet.
Mm-hmm. So I had a little bit of a crisis. So Kieran and I talked a little bit about this episode and next week's episode. So Kieran knows what I'm going to be talking about, but he doesn't know the content of the episode.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I just know that it's... Am I allowed to say?
Well, I mean, you've never really gotten to say before. Maybe we break with tradition for this one.
Ooh. This week, we're talking about me.
Why would you do that? You had one job.
Stop talking about me. I'm not interested.
It's a big responsibility opening the episode.
Oh, man. I just fucked it.
You did.
Shit.
You won't be doing that again.
Yeah. Oh, well. Would you like to take over?
Yes, I would. I would. So, this is the first time that I've been working on an episode. And I've had an idea in my head at the beginning of how I think it's going to go and what all my research is going to be. And then it's turned out very differently from what I thought. Which was very stressful given the quick turnaround for this episode. Because I don't really have the time to do it all again. But I was expecting lots of spooky stories and like ghost encounters this week. But I did all the research and there just weren't any.
Oh.
Or if there were, they were like one sentence.
Hmm.
And that was kind of it. And like it just wasn't very compelling. So... This is going to be more of a history-heavy episode. More history-based rather than spooky-based. And a lot of the things that I'm going to touch on could do with their own episode of the podcast. So just bear that in mind. This is not extensive or exhaustive. Exhaustive?
Dunno.
It's not completely complete. Because I can only touch on things, you know, as much as I can for this episode. So yeah, I'll probably come back and do full episodes on some of the events and the people that we talk about, just to really do it justice.
I'll allow it.
But today, we're going to be talking about Ukert Castle.
Ooh.
I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this, but what do you know about Ukert Castle? Have you ever been?
We drove past, and I think we went into the car park, but it was still COVID, so we weren't allowed to go in.
We did. This was last summer, I think.
Yes.
We took a drive.
Probably a little before this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only interaction with it.
I think I might have gone like years ago, but I really don't know. I'm not sure. But like I said, I thought that, you know, when I decided that Ukert Castle was going to be this week, I thought, okay, there's going to be lots of ghost stories. It's a very haunting location visually. So I thought that, you know, this is going to be really spooky. Kind of like our Glam's episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a couple of things. Like, there's a photo that I, one photo that I found that's supposedly an apparition in a window. But I wasn't hugely convinced by it. I don't really know. And then there was a two or three line story of a white lady haunting the castle. Hmm. But that was it in one place. And I couldn't find any more than that. So I didn't really want to have a whole episode about these tiny little scraps of stories. But I want to say here that if you're listening and you've been to Ukert Castle and you've had a spooky experience at Ukert Castle, then I was going to suggest emailing it to us.
Well, that's a good idea.
And maybe we could have a kind of bonus episode of people's ghostly experiences at Ukert Castle.
Mm.
Or maybe, I suppose we could open it up to any place that we've talked about. If you've been there and you have your own experience, because that would be good fun.
That'd be fun. I'd be up for that.
But here in particular, because I just couldn't find any. I did so much searching and digging to try and find ghost stories about Ukert Castle, but they just don't exist.
So it's the only not haunted castle.
Well, apparently, but that doesn't seem right.
I know. How can you have an ancient castle that's not had any, like, trauma?
Well, that's not true. Ghost? Like, it has a history.
Not that's led to a ghost, though.
Mm. I know, it's bizarre. Ooh. It's really, really bizarre. Couldn't find anything on the boards. Nothing.
Maybe the two guys from Supernatural went there and they got rid of all the ghosts.
Do you mean BuzzFeed Unsolved?
No, I mean the show Supernatural with Sam and someone.
Oh, the Winchester brothers.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yeah, they banished all the ghosts.
Maybe. It certainly seems that way because I couldn't find anything. So rather than looking at the spook, we are going to get somewhat into the 1,000-year history of Ukert Castle.
That's a long time.
It's pretty incredible when you think about that span of time and, you know, that the fact that we can still talk about it now. And the castle's been part of some of the major events in Scottish history. And it's right on our doorstep.
Mm.
So it's quite incredible. I'm quite excited to get into it.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about it.
Something in my eye. Dry skin, I think.
Your finger.
Thank you. So like I said, Ukert Castle isn't actually too far from where Kieran and I are right now.
Mm-hmm.
We live in Cawdor, just outside Nairn. And Ukert Castle is between Inverness and Drumnadrochit. And it sits on the bank of a loch. Now, I don't know if you would know it. You know, I'd never heard of it before. Apparently it's on the banks of Loch Ness.
Loch Ness.
Do you know it?
Loch Ness. Rings a bell, but...
You think?
Nothing.
I can't say I'm familiar.
Nothing coming to mind.
No. No, I didn't know either.
No.
No. I think we're going further back in history in this episode than we have in any of our episodes so far, which I'm very excited about. So, to start this episode off, we need to go all the way back to 580 AD.
Damn.
The year 580.
Yeah, because I think Glam's went back to 13-something.
I think so. It was somewhat modern.
Mm-hmm.
more contemporary.
I mean, relative to 500
AD. Yeah, like in the scheme of things, I mean. But yeah, 580 AD, and we're going back to the time of the Picts.
Ah.
One of my favourite periods of history and Scotland to study ever. I loved learning about the Picts.
Do they paint themselves blue?
Well, I'm about to tell you, Kieran.
Why not?
I'm about to tell you. The Picts were a people who were living in northern Scotland at this time, so like the 500s, in and around there. And they have a reputation that's lingered into modern times for being a very mysterious people. And I think this is largely because as a society, I don't know if that's the right word, they didn't leave any written records.
Mm.
So there's just a lot of things about their culture, the way they lived, all the things like that, that we just don't know because they didn't record it anywhere. A lot of what we know about the Picts comes from, like, we're getting the information kind of secondhand, like other people are writing about them and recording them. So it's difficult, but they're so interesting as a culture and as a people. I absolutely love it. They're seen nowadays as the descendants of the prehistoric people that were living in what we would now call Scotland.
Because
obviously the land that we're in now wasn't always called Scotland, and it wasn't always split up the way that we understand it now. Scotland, you know, is a largely unified country. But across history, it hasn't been that way. Lots of different peoples living in different areas. You know, you've got like the Gaels and the Scots further south. It's kind of that thing.
I'm pretty sure we saw that on like a tea table recently, or some sort of poster or something.
Did we?
There was Scotland, and it showed you all the different regions.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so you know what I mean. So they were there a long time. But across history, the Picts have been seen as monsters or fairies, but mostly as a real pain in the ass of the Roman Empire. So, you know, Hadrian's Wall.
Well, I was just thinking, like, 500 AD, is that Hadrian? Is that him? Was he around then?
Now, see, I will say that Kieran has a pretty good knowledge of ancient Rome and ancient Greece. You do a lot of reading.
I do read quite a lot about you ancient lot. Rome. The timelines are very difficult, though. But I was wondering if it was Hadrian, who was around in 500 AD, because the Roman Empire was still about.
Yes. So Hadrian's Wall was built to keep the northerners out of the Roman Empire because they couldn't beat them. So they just walled them out. I'm particularly proud of that part of our history, it has to be said.
It's pretty good.
The fact that the wall is still there, I don't know.
Mm.
I don't know if it's a particularly Scottish thing. Yeah. You find out something like that and you're just like, yeah. Yeah. So going back to what you were saying, the word Pict translates to painted people.
Yeah.
And it's how the Romans described how the Pictish people painted and tattooed themselves. So in all the Roman writings of the Picts, I think they called them the Picti. I think that was the Roman word, or Latin word, Roman word.
Probably Latin, I'm not sure.
Picti, because they were painted or tattooed all over. And when you see modern interpretations of how we think the Picts look, it's always very cool. Like they look badass, like the blue paint everywhere.
In Terry Pratchett, there's the Pictsies.
Oh, yeah.
In
The Wee Free Men?
Yeah, The Wee Free Men. In a few books, and they're painted blue, and all have ginger hair, and all go, like, oogh and hoots, and they're tiny.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, little Pictsies.
Coming from the Picts of history. And although they didn't leave written records, we have a rough idea of how their society as a whole kind of worked. So although the Picts were one group to themselves, there were several groups that made up Pictish society.
Mm.
They all lived in different areas, and they seemed to have their own leader. But what I thought was interesting when I was doing my reading for this was that the invasion of the Romans actually brought all the groups of Picts together for possibly like the first time, the only time, because they were fighting against a common enemy. And they usually fought a lot amongst themselves.
Usually had to Picked sides.
please email your complaints to generallyspooky@gmail.com. Thanks.
Well, we didn't say the email address when we said people should email in, so that's fine. That's
there you go.
They're normally fighting amongst themselves.
That's what I was... Yeah. So, the pigs were fighting a lot amongst themselves, but when the Romans invaded, you know, they're the bigger threat. Your enemy's enemy is my friend, however that goes. My enemy's enemy is my friend.
Yes.
That kind of thing. Brought them together. Which isn't that different from how the clans operated much, much, much later. So, the Scottish clans were often fighting with each other. There were feuds over just about everything. But, you know, if there was a common cause or a common enemy, quite often they would come together.
Mm. Quite often it would be the English.
Yes. You know, like, there were feuds and there were some chasms that were too big to cross when it came to the clan system. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, sometimes they would come together.
Yeah.
But quite often they were just at each other's throats. So I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
Even though thousands of years before... Or hundreds of years before, that was still sort of the way it worked.
Yeah, and if that all sounds familiar, it's because that's what happens in Game of Thrones. George R. R. Martin built his big North of the Wall, and there's all these different clans of the wildlings.
Yeah, I guess
that aren't together, and then they get brought all together because there's a common enemy.
Well, this is a complete tangent. But lots of Game of Thrones is inspired by British history.
Mm-hmm.
You have the War of the Roses and things like that. And the Red Wedding is based on something that actually happened.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Maybe we should do a Game of Thrones episode.
That'd be quite fun.
But there's a reason that I bring all of this up.
Because
I know we're talking about Urquhart Castle. There's a reason that I've gone this far back. And it's to talk a bit about one of the Pictish High Kings. So remember I said that you have all the groups of the Picts. They each had their own leader, but the Picts had a high king who was the king of all the Picts. And we're talking about one in particular who was called Bride. B-R-I-D-E-I. I may be saying that wrong.
No idea.
I don't know. We're talking about him and one of his noblemen who was called Emchath.
Oh.
And that's E-M-C-H-A-T-H.
Oofed.
But you know, if that's a Gaelic name, which I don't think it is because Gaelic comes from somewhere else than the Picts, you pronounce it completely differently.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're having a go.
I'm doing my best.
You're trying.
I'm doing my best. So there's a lot of evidence to show that Bride, the High King, actually had a settlement and a court at Craig Fadrig.
Ooh.
Where we've been.
We have been there.
It's a big hill just outside Inverness. And you can go to the spot where this ancient fortress used to be. It's overgrown, like there's no building left, but you can see where the foundations were.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his court.
Very cool.
And like, I didn't know that at the time. Oh. I just knew it was ancient. So yeah, that's where he was. And it looks out over the Beauly Firth. So it was strategic because you had the lay of the land. You could see everything. It was very high. And Bride, like most of the Picts, had their own religion and their own beliefs. You know, it's an ancient civilization, quite common. But as time passed, the Picts gradually became exposed to Christianity and a lot of them converted. So it's something that gets talked about a lot, and it was something that was debated for a long time, is how the Picts just vanished.
Mm.
Like, there was all these records in history of them existing and then they just didn't anymore. So historians were wondering, like, well, who wiped out the Picts? What happened? But it seems like they converted to Christianity.
That's interesting.
And they weren't the same anymore.
Yeah, accepted the common law.
Because one thing that was interesting for me personally, I grew up in Portmahomock, which is a village on the east coast of Scotland, and there's evidence of a monastery there at the same time that the Picts existed. So there's lots of proof that, you know, Christians were making their way through Scotland at the same time that the Picts were living, which proves, you know, that they will have found out about Christianity one way or another.
That's really interesting.
So Bride was an important man. So, you know, it was going to take someone important to convert him to Christianity. You know, save his soul, because his beliefs weren't good enough to have him be a good person, obviously.
Naturally, naturally.
And that's what drew St. Columba, the St. Columba, from Iona Abbey to Inverness and the surrounding area.
I don't know St. Columba or Iona Abbey.
What?
I've not heard of either of them.
And you have a history podcast?
I know what Abbey is. I can cling on to that.
Basically, I'm not going to get too into this because it's the history of Christianity at this point. But basically, he's an important saint. And he travelled from Iona, the island, and the abbey there, into Scotland. And he travelled about quite a lot, converting people and spreading the word of Christianity. And he travelled to Inverness and the area around here, along with his biographer, Adomnan.
Oh.
Adomnan? Adomnan?
Adam and...
A-D-O-M-N-A-N. Adomnan.
Adomnan.
And he recorded the entire journey and everything for Columba while he travelled. So Adomnan recorded that Columba was in and about Inverness and he came to meet with Brede and convert him to Christianity.
Damn.
Yeah. But Brede wasn't the only person that Columba saw on the visit. He heard about Emchath, the nobleman, who had his court and his home on the banks of Loch Ness.
Where was that again?
I don't know. I couldn't really be bothered looking into it. Like, I don't know. I don't know where that is. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
But he heard about Emchath because he was dying.
Oh.
So Columba knew he had to save this man's soul before he died and convert him. So that's what he did. He journeyed to what is now Urquhart Castle, where this Pictish fortress was, and the story goes that he baptized Emchath and everyone else in the household, and it was all amazing and wonderful and beautiful, according to his biographer. But there is some evidence that there was a Pictish settlement where, or at least around where Urquhart Castle is now. Archaeologists have found like little pieces of a Pictish brooch that comes from like 700 to 800 AD. So that's pretty incredible,
that's
I think.
That's really cool. You have said that before. I think it was in the Clans Castle episode, how the castles might not be as old as people have settled at these places.
Yes, yes. So the Pictish settlement technically isn't there anymore, but there is a castle on the site.
Yeah.
So the physical castle isn't as old as the Pictish settlement.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
I thought that was incredible. So, like, it seems like a bit of a tangent to get here, but...
I like it.
You know, that was 1,500 years ago. That's absolutely incredible.
Gotta have a good foundation for your castle story.
Please email your complaints to generallyspooky@gmail.com. So, yeah. Columba was doing the rounds.
Must be compelling stuff. I can't even imagine that he managed to convert all these people.
Oh, right. I thought you meant, like, my story.
Well, you're...
That's a bit rude.
Oh, man.
Seems like you're being sarcastic. That's a bit mean to say that right to my face.
So we're still recording. Not even after or before.
You can show your true self on the microphone, Kieran. Otherwise, no one will listen.
I'm not an asshole. Don't perpetuate on the internet that I'm an asshole.
Unconfirmed.
But yeah, this guy must have been... quite the presence.
Yeah, I think so.
To have overturned what must have been quite ancient beliefs.
I think this is just from past readings, so there may be no basis to this. So this is stuff that I read years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the big draws of Christianity was the fact that you could learn to read and write.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, you were reading the Bible or whatever form it was in then. So being able to read and write meant that you had control. Because if you could read and write, then you could introduce the rule of law, because you could write down the laws.
Yeah, that is quite the power like no other.
And
the read and write.
Suddenly you're able to write down and say, I own this. This is mine. Nobody can take it. You know, like, it has its own advantages. It seems very mundane and basic when you think about it that like that, but considering they didn't have that before.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I remember reading that a while ago. I can't remember where. But I think that was the big appeal.
That does make sense. In that burial rites book, the one about Iceland, that I read. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
They're all surprised at the different people that can read and write, and they all learnt at the church.
Well, yeah, I think it's something that's endured, and I think, at least when Christianity was being introduced, I think that was the big selling point, that you could be in charge of your lands and you could keep things organised and very clear who owned what, mm-hmm. and what the rule of law was.
Does make sense.
I'm pretty sure that's... Well, we're getting into a sidetrack now, but like the Magna Carta, the first human rights document.
Oh, yeah.
I think the origins of that were from people writing down the first laws for the first time.
Mm.
Obviously, this is all just chat. Like, I haven't researched this for this episode, so this could be entirely wrong.
Hmm.
But I just think, like, I'm so fascinated by the Picts as a culture. So, like I said, like, I grew up in Port Mahomet, and there was always archaeological digs happening, mm-hmm. and there's a really... It's small, but it's a really cool museum of all the artifacts that they found there. All these, like, carved stones that are absolutely incredible. All these... Excuse me. All these different artifacts that you can go and see of people who were living there, you know, thousands of years ago, in the place that you are now as a child. It's... I don't know. I don't know if it's just being exposed to it that early, but it has a special place in my heart for sure.
That was pretty cool.
So during their travels in and around Inverness, Adomnan also wrote a little bit in his account about some kind of encounter on the loch. Some kind of monster that St. Columba defeated.
A monster?
Yeah. I don't really know. You probably don't want to hear about it.
A monster in Loch Ness?
Yeah, it doesn't sound very compelling.
That sounds a bit weird.
Should I just move on?
Yeah.
Okay. Archaeologists have been able to figure out that there was at least some kind of fortress on the site of Urquhart Castle between the 5th and 11th centuries. I couldn't find a lot of details about what life was like or how they came to this kind of conclusion, but there is one detail that I think you, Kieran in particular, will quite enjoy. Because it's kind of science-based.
I love science.
Kieran studied physics. I don't know if we said that before.
I did, for my sins.
That's your background. So there's evidence that the fortress that was there during this period was a vitrified fortress.
It's a $10 word.
Mm-hmm. Are you impressed?
I am.
Basically, this means that the rocks that the fortress was made of have been treated with some kind of heat process that melts all the rock together.
Oh, wow.
And it can make it smooth, or it can make it look kind of glass-like.
Oh.
And this was done between the 5th and 11th centuries.
Damn.
Right? Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
So, and some of them are from even earlier. Some of them are apparently from the Iron Age that they were doing this. And archaeologists aren't entirely sure why they did it, because initially, and I thought as well, initially... You would think that's to strengthen the building.
That was my first thought. Is it stronger?
It's not. It weakens the building.
Oh.
So, you know, no one's really sure why they did it. Whether people did it on purpose, to purposely weaken the building, or if it was for the way it looked. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. I wonder if it burnt down and happened accidentally.
Maybe. I really don't know. Oh. I didn't look too deep into this, because, you know, there's so many things in this that we could talk about at length. But I thought that was pretty cool.
That is really cool. Reminds me of Minecraft. That's how you make smooth cobblestone.
Yeah, I guess it's a similar process. So now we're in the 1200s.
1200s.
So we know that there was something there between the 5th and 11th century. We're in the 1200s. And Urquhart Castle's story only gets more turbulent from here. The first recorded mention of the castle is from 1296.
Okay.
You with me? And unfortunately, it was recorded because King Edward I of England took the castle in 1296. And we're going to talk about him a little bit, because he had the affectionate nickname of Hammer of the Scots.
I have heard of this guy.
Yeah, he was a lovely guy. In 1290, he actually signed a law that forced all the Jews out of England.
Fuck.
What a dick.
Wow.
Yeah. The expulsion of the Jews.
Jesus.
In 1290.
1290.
Awful.
Awful.
Awful. And then he started squashing rebellions in Wales. So he forced them to accept English rule, so took over the Kingdom of Wales. Lovely. And then he decided Scotland would be next.
Mm.
And he was sneaky. He was a sneaky guy. So the Scots were having a bit of a crisis around this time, because the heir to the throne, she was a 7-year-old called Margaret, because her dad had died unexpectedly when she was 3. So she was the heir. She's now 7. And she died unexpectedly on a voyage from Orkney to the mainland, which left Scotland with no king or queen. So everyone was, you know, a bit concerned.
Yeah.
And I never knew this, but this whole crisis is referred to as the Great Cause.
Hmm.
And naturally, lots of people step forward to fill in the vacancy
of
monarch. Lots of people happy to take that bullet of absolute power and prestige.
I could do it if you like.
You know, like, yeah. I could see that. I can't remember how many there were total. There were loads. I think it was maybe 13.
Oh, that's less than I expected.
People, I can't remember. There may have been more. But, you know, they all had differing claims on the throne. When you look back at lineage and things, mm-hmm. people are able to say that they're more related than other people.
Mm.
They're closer in lineage than some other, you know, the usual. But Robert the Bruce was one of these people.
Oh.
And so was John Balliol, who would actually be named king. King John Balliol. But to get to this outcome, the nobles and important political figures in Scotland needed an objective mediator. Someone to help them come to a decision for what would be best for Scotland. Who do you think they asked, Kieran?
Well, it wasn't me, and it wasn't you.
You don't know it wasn't me.
Oh, that's true. I don't know what you were doing in 1297.
Exactly.
So I should have assumed that. I'm sorry. Well, it wasn't me. So was it King Edward?
It was King Edward I.
The Foe Hammer.
Hammer of the Scots.
Yeah.
Foe Hammers from the Hobbit?
Yeah, it's the Hammer of the Goblins.
So yeah, they asked him to step in and help them fairly choose a king or queen, but all the people who came forward were male, so choose a king. And of course he accepted.
Oh, well, yeah.
Of course he would help them fairly choose a new king.
They're going, oh, do you know who'd make a great king? My pal over here, Dominic Cummings.
That would have been a spit take. If I had been drinking the water I have beside me, that would have been a spit take.
It's the most topical joke I've ever made.
I know, I'm proud of you. So he accepted. He said he would help them. But he had some demands of his own. Even though was just, you know, helping them do something he had no stake in. He had demands. And one of these demands was that Scotland would legally be viewed as something called a feudal dependency of England, which would effectively make Edward I the overlord of Scotland because he was King of England.
Hmm. Who said yes to that?
Well, I'll get into it, but historically this had happened before.
Okay.
This had been the case, but, you know, it wasn't anymore. And it was ridiculous. I read that as part of his demands, he said that the people who were trying to sort out who should be king in Scotland had to come up with evidence that showed Edward wasn't their king, rather than producing evidence that he was their king. Shady as hell! So, well, where's the proof that I'm not your king? Oh, show me.
Show me. Oh, well, I've got this evidence. Pwah, that's not evidence. Oh. Well, who decides? Me.
It's ridiculous. So, there was, I don't want to get too much into the details because we'll just get, but this is what I mean. Like, this is something that could be its own episode mm-hmm. because it's very intricate. Lots happened. But basically, the Scots managed to sidestep having to agree to this through some technicality. I think it was some technicality to do with the fact that they didn't actually have a king at the moment. So nobody could say that he was their overlord because there was nobody to swear loyalty to him. Mm. Or something like that. But Edward forced the Scots nobles and everyone involved to hand over control of Scotland and all the castles with the promise that he would give control back to whoever became king after 2 months had passed. Seems legit.
I know. He got them with a pyramid scheme.
Mm-hmm. Shady bitch.
Shady bitch.
Shady bitch. Well, I'm sorry that was all very long,
mm-hmm.
but it does come back around later. So like I said, John Balliol was chosen to be king. He had the majority of this committee that was put together, and they had a vote and he got the majority. And he was seen to have the strongest claim to the throne, mm-hmm. so it seemed the most fair. And he had the support of the Comyn family. It might be Comyn, might be Comyn. C-O-M-Y-N. I should have checked. Maybe it's Comyn.
Don't know.
I'm going to say Comyn, I think.
It's not Comyn.
I don't know that much. So. I hate getting names wrong, yeah. but I never know.
Don't know.
But he had the support of the Comyn family, which is something that will crop up later. But after this, Edward kept interfering in Scottish law and Scottish business. He kept meddling. And then war eventually broke out between Scotland and England in the Wars of Independence. Because Edward tried to force King John Balliol to provide Scottish troops for Edward's war against France.
Oh.
But the problem was Scotland and France were allies. So Scotland chose France. But Edward and England eventually defeated Scotland in 1296. And this was when he took possession of Urquhart Castle. See, it all comes around.
Comes around.
All comes around.
Comes back
around. I was getting to a point. But, you know, like, the Great Cause and the Wars of Independence, I'm never going to be able to explain that as part of another story.
Yeah.
Not ever.
We'll just touch on it. If you want to know more, read the History of Scotland by
Neil Oliver.
Neil Oliver.
Or ask us to do an episode.
That would also work.
You know, we can do that for you. We're nice people.
We take requests.
Yeah.
And complaints. Same email address.
Yeah. And I'm going to make Kieran read all the emails from now on. So after all of this, Balliol was taken to the Tower of London and he was imprisoned. And it was a pretty bad time for Scotland, to be honest, because like Balliol had suffered like humiliating defeats and had to concede so much power, and he was humiliated by Edward. It was really bad. And to add injury to insult, this is when Edward stole the Stone of Destiny, which I know you've heard about.
Yes, that I know.
He stole it. And that's an important ancient stone artifact that's used for crowning Scottish kings, which effectively meant he was stealing the ability for Scotland to have their own monarch.
Mm.
What a dick.
What an asshole.
So, bit of a tangent, but that's how we know that Urquhart Castle existed more or less in its current iteration back in 1296.
Yes.
You with me?
Yes. What else happened at Urquhart Castle?
Well, see, the reason I took such a winding road is because what happened after 1296 was a whole lot of back and forth between the Scots and the English in terms of who had control over Urquhart Castle.
Mm.
There was lots of fights and lots of battles of like, trying to take it back from the other.
It's pretty far north for there to be these sorts of battles. You'd expect, or I would expect, something like that to happen much closer to the border, as opposed to them coming through the entirety of Scotland.
But then it's in a very strategic position.
Yeah.
And if you have strongholds throughout the country, it's much easier to quash any kind of stirrings, mm-hmm. I would have thought. But yeah, lots of battles and sieges for possession. And I could get into the detail of all of them. I'm not going to. But then Robert the Bruce was made king in 1306. And remember the Comyns?
I've heard of them.
Who supported John Balliol for king mm-hmm. instead of Robert the Bruce. Bit awkward now, because the Comyns had stayed pretty cosy with King Edward after everything had happened. And they actually had control of Urquhart Castle when Robert the Bruce became king. So then, you know, the Bruce marched across all of Scotland and took everything back. And he took the castle back in 1307.
Good job.
Which I thought was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Somewhere that's local to us, he took the castle. Mm. Another cool little tidbit was that when Robert the Bruce died, Urquhart Castle was the only Highland castle that held out from the English.
No. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Isn't it? And then, after all this, Urquhart Castle became a royal castle held by a constable for the crown.
Mm.
I think for the Scottish crown, rather than the English. But it all gets a bit confusing. There's lots of dates and people, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to spare the worst of it for you, just to get to the good bits.
The gory bits.
Yeah. And now in that spirit, we're going to jump ahead.
Ooh.
And we're going to talk about the 200 years between now 1300 and the 1500s.
Let's do it.
And we're actually leaving Urquhart Castle for a moment. And we're going to travel to the islands on the west coast.
Is that legal?
Yes. I say so.
You are taking us on this journey through time.
I am.
And space.
And space. Can we do that? Isn't that a thing?
Yeah, you can move through.
You can do both.
Yeah, you can. You're always moving through time and space.
Oh, why do I have that wrong?
To a point you can't stop moving through time and space.
I guess. Anyway, in the 12th century, a man called Somerled was the first Lord of the Isles.
Hmm.
You know this. And this title was passed down through his family and through his descendants. And while I'm sure a lot of Scottish people will be able to claim exactly the same thing that I'm about to say, but my granny's side of the family, who are MacDonalds, are related to Somerled.
Yeah.
My granny's brother has been working on a family tree and he's been able to trace it all the way back to Somerled.
Very nice.
Possibly a bit earlier, I can't remember, but back to like the Vikings, I think before Somerled, which I think is very cool.
I think that's very cool.
It's something I feel very proud of. Mm. So these were a seafaring people, the people who lived under the Lord of the Isles. They were island people. And I have a list of all the territory that the Lord of the Isles covered, which I think you'll be interested because it's pretty massive. So a little bit of Argyll, the Isle of Arran, Bute, Islay, the Isle of Man,
okay,
all the Hebrides, and including Skye and Ross from 1438, Knoidart, Ardnamuchan, and the Kintyre Peninsula.
Okay.
So a huge area of land all up the west coast.
Yeah.
They were really, really powerful. I read in one article that they were actually the most powerful lords who weren't kings.
Oh, that's cool.
They had a huge amount of influence, a huge amount of power, and, you know, they were respected. Eventually, the Lord of the Isles title was passed down to Clan Donald, purely just because that's who the descendants were, the MacDonalds. And they were adamant for a long time, even before, you know, they were MacDonalds, this goes back a long time, they were adamant that the islands, their territories, were independent from the rest of Scotland.
Mm.
They were their own thing. They weren't under Scottish rule. So this is what I mean. It's, you have to remember that back through history, countries aren't solid. They don't stay the same. And this was actually respected for a while. The kings of Scotland and England would come to agreements with the Lord of the Isles about what they could and couldn't do, and, you know, maintained a kind of somewhat easy peace between them. And, you know, they had their own lord. They didn't want to swear fealty to a Scottish king, and they really didn't want to swear fealty to an English king. They had their own territory. They were powerful. But eventually, King James IV of Scotland used force. He used his military to take the territory and take the title of Lord of the Isles in the 1400s. And it actually annoyed me reading about this, and I'm going to tell you why. Because since the time of King James IV, since the 1500s, the first child of the reigning English monarch, has been named Lord of the Isles. So Prince Bloody Charles is the Lord of the Isles.
Oh, no. Really?
Yes, really.
Oh, God.
What is that about?
Ooh. Just given a bit of Scotland.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he has all these other titles. I'm pretty sure he's the Steward of Scotland, the High Steward of Scotland. And he's the Prince of Wales and the Duke of Rothesay. He's got so many titles. But yeah, he has the Lord of the Isles title.
Man.
Which,
that's,
you know, like, it really, really bothered me. It really, really bothered me. Like, I try not to get too biased on here, but it just really bothered me that it got taken like that. And it's the Windsors that have the title. I don't agree.
No.
So, the next line I have written down is going to make you laugh. Because it says, anyway, the MacDonalds weren't going to take this lying down.
I can see that.
I know.
Yeah.
So fighting and tensions just broke loose, and eventually Urquhart Castle became a target for lots of raids by the MacDonalds. by the Lords of the Isles. Like, it's in a very strategic spot. It's the stronghold of their enemy.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty well stocked with just stuff. So they would raid the castle, and unfortunately they would raid the land around it.
Mm-hmm.
The estate there is called Glenucker. You know, like, now there's Glenucker High School and things around there.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, you know, they were carrying out these raids, and they terrorised a lot of the people that lived there and destroyed a lot. And over all the raids, the MacDonalds made off with a lot of stuff.
Mm.
They were very successful raiders. So they'd steal, like, weapons, like big guns, cannons, food, mountains of food. They would even steal boats.
It's good work.
They would steal boats.
Got that Viking energy coursing yeah. through their veins.
In 1517, they managed to steal 300 cattle and 1,000 sheep.
In how long? Did you just say?
Just in 1517.
Damn, in one year.
That's not across that in a raid.
Well, that's wild.
They led off all the cattle and all the sheep.
Damn.
It's kind of impressive.
That is impressive.
It's weirdly impressive.
A Pied Piper.
Yeah. So now we're in the 1500s. Like I said, we were travelling over 200 years. So mm-hmm. the MacDonalds have been raiding all throughout this time. Now King James IV is king. He decides to give Urquhart Castle to the Grant family in 1509, which was very generous of him.
I know.
But like anything, there were terms and conditions to this castle ownership. The Grants were allowed to have the castle on the condition that they restored it. And they had to restore the Glenucker estate around it. So there was a lot of damage. The castle wasn't in great condition. And it was in need of some attention and some money, basically. So the Grants agreed. I think they had a 5-year lease to start with, and then they were granted it in perpetuity. Perpetuity? Perpetuity?
Granted.
Ugh. But it was during this time that Grant Tower was built, which is a section of Urquhart Castle which you can still see.
Oh.
They built this huge 5-story tower and called it Grant Tower. It's very impressive. But despite having the Grants as dedicated owners, there wasn't really any peace because the MacDonalds kept raiding around Glenucker until 1545. So a long time. And the last raid was in 1545, and it was called the Great Raid.
Hmm.
And the MacDonalds made off with about 2,000 cattle.
How would you even get those onto boats? Like, oh.
Well, I don't know if it was by boat. Might not have been. Because they might have landed like somewhere else. I'm not sure.
Even still.
But they made off with hundreds of other animals. And they even raided the castle itself for everything inside it. So they took furniture. They took everything. But they even stole the gates. They stole the castle gates. Which I just thought was ballsy.
I know. Do you think there was one person that was like, mate, we're all going in. You can have what's left. Oh, there's going to be nothing left. Guy comes in. Well, I'm going to take the fucking gates then, am I? Leave me with nothing. I'm taking home something.
I don't know if it's just knowing my granny, but just knowing that they did their job so well that they took the gates away with them, it just made me laugh.
Oh, it's very packing the kitchen sink.
Yeah. Pretty much. Or just, you know, haha, we win.
Yeah.
But this raid was, I think, so big because it was in retaliation for a battle that happened the year before.
Oh.
In 1544. And it was called the Battle of the Shirts, which is a strange name. I didn't look too much into this battle for the sake of this, but it involves several different clans, as these things tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty big stoosh and involved the Camerons, the MacDonalds, and, get ready, Outlander fans, the Frasers. They finally appeared in the podcast. We're going to move on.
Is that Sam Heughan's character?
Yeah, he is Jamie Fraser of the Frasers.
Mm.
So they finally appeared.
It was going to happen. They did exist. Mm-hmm. He might not have.
They, you know, they're real, but we're not going to linger.
No.
So now we're going to jump ahead again to 1644. Or like 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Urquhart Castle was attacked while the lady of the castle, Lady Mary Grant, was living there. And it was attacked by a group of Covenanters. Now, have you heard of Covenanters before?
I have not.
Well, basically, again, this is another thing that could be its own episode. They were a group of people, the Covenanters, who supported the Presbyterian Church.
Okay.
And they believed that Presbyterianism was the most important religion in Scotland, the only religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's a form of Christianity. And their name basically comes from the covenant that they believe they've signed with God, I think. But they wanted to resist the changes to the Kirk that were proposed by King Charles I. They didn't agree with what he was trying to do religiously. It's a very complicated argument, but I don't want to get too much into it, but you know what I'm like. I don't know when to stop. So these Covenanters attacked Urquhart Castle because Lady Mary Grant was an Episcopalian, not a Presbyterian. And these religious holier-than-thous robbed the place.
Doesn't seem very godly, does it?
They practically emptied it. And they went so far as to actually turn her out of the castle.
Damn.
And that must have been so scary. Having, like, a mob. A full mob attacking your home and making you leave and taking everything that you had. Terrifying.
Terrifying.
During the Jacobite rebellions in the late 1600s, so there's a few different risings. So there's multiple Jacobite rebellions and risings.
Mm-hmm.
There's the 1745, which is Culloden, but this is in the late 1600s. So this is before all of that.
Yep.
The Grants, who had the castle, sided with William of Orange and not King James when it came to the Protestant or Catholic king debate. William of Orange basically took the throne on the basis that a lot of the nobles wanted a Protestant king, not a Catholic one, which is his own whole complicated mess.
We won't even go there.
But the Grants sided with William of Orange, not King James. That's what's important. And because they'd done that, they had to make sure that Urquhart Castle was pretty well defended, because a lot of the support for King James and the Catholic Stuarts came from the Highlands.
Okay.
So Urquhart Castle's right in the middle of that. So they knew it could be a target and it could be quite vulnerable if it wasn't defended properly. So it became a garrison. There was soldiers posted at Urquhart Castle. I think like 200 men, I might have read somewhere, who were there on behalf of the throne and everything that's good. And these soldiers, fair play, they held out against Jacobite attacks during the rebellion. Like, Urquhart Castle didn't fall to the Jacobites.
Yeah.
And I think I read about one siege in particular where there were 500 Jacobites at the walls and the castle didn't fall.
Mm.
So, you know, impressive.
It's fair play.
But before the soldiers finally left for the last time in 1692, they blew up the castle.
Just full on blew it up.
They blew up the castle. Like, explosion blew up Urquhart Castle.
Damn, not like blowing up on social media.
No. Not quite that. Similar, not quite the same. But yeah, they blew the castle to bits. So that once they left, it couldn't be used as a fortress anymore.
Oh, fuck.
So they did that so the Jacobites couldn't come in at the back of them and use the castle.
Huh.
Which is why the castle is in the state that it's in now. The castle's a ruin.
Oh, I don't think I knew that.
No, like, you can still visit it. There's still bits standing, but it's not an intact building.
Oh, I thought it was like, oh, excuse me, like Cawdor Castle, where you can go in and walk around. And
well, you can, but
it's still like lived in and inhabited.
Oh, no. Urquhart Castle's a ruin.
Oh.
It's open to the elements, it's crumbly, and this is why, because it got blown up.
Well, there you go.
And the Grants were apparently given £2,000 in compensation from the Crown for the damage that was caused, but they never repaired the castle.
Wow. I wonder why not.
I don't know. I read somewhere that it became seen as quite a romantic idea that there's this castle in ruins and it's left in the state that it was, and it's a piece of history. Like, that's a relatively modern idea, and I think that kind of took hold.
Very poetic.
Yeah, because it's very beautiful, and it is haunting. You look at it, and it is a very haunting place. But yeah, it's a ruin. It's left largely in the state that it was in when the soldiers left. But then in 1715, Grant Tower fell down.
Oh no.
In a storm. So there's only part of that still standing.
Oh man.
You can see the place where it was, but, you know, that came down too.
Jeez, oh. I wonder if part of the reason they didn't repair it is because no one owned it. Like, no one wanted to live there. Like, they got their compensation and they left. Like, well, it's going to be really expensive to repair this castle that nobody seems to be able to keep for any length of time. Well, a fair length of time for some of them, but you're just going to spend all your money repairing a castle, which you might then lose to the enemies.
Yeah, I guess. There's an argument for that.
And if, like, you don't need it. Like, there's no one being like, oh, this has been my home for, like, the Glam's castle going back through all the Lord Glam's.
Well, it's still in the same family living there.
For, like, 18 generations. Like, if it were to somehow get blown up just now, they'd be like, well, no, we've lived here for 18 generations. We're going to repair it and keep living here.
And it's their family home.
Yeah. Whereas when it's been tussled back and forth, like, no one... There's not that, like, sense of historic, like, loyalty to it, almost.
What if it's cursed?
Oh, now there's a theory.
Mm-hmm.
What if it's actually Hogwarts and it just looks abandoned, and if we try and get close to it, we just get all confused and then walk away from it again?
I mean, they have like 500,000 visitors annually.
It's a good spell. Keep it secret.
I don't know. But what if it's cursed? Back to my thing.
Could be cursed.
Yeah. There's one legend, I have this written down at like the very end of my story, but there is one legend that Urquhart Castle was built for this legendary hero, and I can't remember his name. I have it written down somewhere, it's a Gaelic name. But he asked a group of witches who lived in the area around Urquhart Castle to build him this great castle. And they did. But they cursed it.
Ooh.
So maybe that's why it's in my head.
Maybe. Can't trust a cunning woman.
So the castle is like magic, but cursed.
Ooh.
Built by witches.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's all... I forgot the word. It was the V word for when they smoothed over the stone.
Vitrified?
Yes.
Oh.
I'm like, viscerated? But no, that's, no. That's not a word.
So in 1911, more recently, the Dowager Countess of Seafield. Yeah.
That's an eye roll, for those of you who can't see me.
She gave Urquhart Castle over to state care when she died. It was in her will that it would be owned by, I think it's now owned by like the National Trust or Historic Scotland, it's one of them. But it's, in effect, not owned by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken care of by a community and by volunteers, which is why you can now go and visit the castle and you can see everything for yourself.
Mm.
I think she got possession of it in 1884.
Yeah, I was wondering, how do you suddenly own an abandoned castle?
Inheritance. She's a dowager countess. It's definitely inheritance.
Yeah.
But she gave it over to the state.
Well, that's nice.
And now, it's a very cool place. I very much want to go... Well, we've been talking about this, actually, that we want to just do a generally spooky tour.
Uh-huh.
And we want to visit all the places that we've talked about this season. And I really want to go. And I have a magic word that will make you want to come with me.
Cafe.
Trebuchet.
Oh!
They have a trebuchet.
Oh, I'm in.
That you can go see.
I am in.
And I think it's from... Like, it's authentic. It's a real trebuchet that was used.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. And you can go see a prison cell and a cellar. Apparently one of the cellars still contains the plague, and if you go in it, you'll die.
Ooh. We should just nip in and see.
Just nip in.
I think I said you get to see a prisoner being trebucheted.
No.
I was like, what? No. Is that allowed?
No. But they have a trebuchet.
That's very cool.
I thought that would intrigue you.
That definitely intrigues me. I absolutely want to go and see a trebuchet.
And that is the very condensed and not at all exhaustive history of Urquhart Castle.
Damn. That's really cool.
There are so many things that I never knew.
Yeah. I didn't know any of that. It's interesting it was so tussled, like back and forth. And I think from thinking about where it is, I can see it being very strategic.
You can see all the way down the loch from the castle.
Yeah, that weird loch place. And yeah, because you're kind of protected by the loch on one side, and then it's kind of quite mountainous on the other side.
So it's very steep.
Yeah, it would be very hard to siege.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see why if you were in it, you would have a fighting chance of keeping it.
Well, I didn't get into all of the battles and switching of hands that the castle went through between the Scots and the English. That it was a lot. It was highly fought for.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, there were unsuccessful attempts as well. There was those.
I imagine.
But yeah, it is in a good spot. Like, it's the area around the loch is steep.
Because the road that goes round the loch is, like, it looks very carved into the mountain.
Well, Uckert Castle, it's just off the A82.
Yeah.
You pull off the road and you're almost on top of it.
And if it's COVID, the gates are locked.
Yes, and you can go visit. But you can now, I've checked. It's open. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. 17 picked out 17.
Such a good rating scale.
It's so efficient. It was interesting about the Picts, thinking that they might have vanished with Christianity. So they didn't so much vanish as they got, like, amalgamated.
Well, yeah, they just changed.
Yeah.
They transformed.
Because they were still there, and they're still the same people. They just had a different culture.
Well, really. Once they developed the ability to record their experience, they weren't, strictly speaking, Picts anymore. They were Christians.
Yeah.
So they're not, strictly speaking, recording the Pictish experience anymore. They've converted.
Weird.
See, when you get into stuff like that, it's insanely interesting, I think. It's
really interesting. And you were saying there was a monastery near where you used to live?
Yes.
I thought all the monasteries got destroyed at some point across the UK.
Well, I mean, this isn't a standing monastery. It's the remains.
That makes sense.
The remains of a monastery that was there on the site.
So it's weird that it was these monasteries all popped up and then they converted and then someone else destroyed all the monasteries. But they'd already done their job.
Like, well, I'm pretty sure it's a monastery that's on Iona.
Yeah.
The Abbey. That's your homework. You need to look up Columba.
Columba.
Although, you might not have to, because we're talking about him in next week's episode.
Are we?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Interesting. The season finale.
The season finale of Genuinely Spooky.
Oh. I mean, there's a lot of hype for season finales now. Mm-hmm.
Should we tell them?
We could tell them.
Should we tell the people?
I think. Well, do you want to hear people? Yes, please.
Do you want to redeem yourself by doing the reveal since you couldn't introduce the episode?
No, I'm feeling too silly. I'll just do something stupid.
Well, to relieve some of the pain that we probably caused you through this episode, next week's finale is going to be about the Loch Ness Monster. Because of course we know who Nessie is, and of course we know where Loch Ness is.
We know where Loch Ness is. All people talk about
if they find out where we live.
Yeah.
So yes, that is our final episode, and I'm very excited about it. We have a special interview with an expert.
We do. Well, you do. I didn't do it.
It's going to be a good one. I'm excited. Yeah,
it's going to be great.
It's a big part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And just what you learn growing up if you live anywhere in the Highlands.
Everyone's read some sort of picture book about Nessie. Oh, exciting. Mm-hmm.
I'm pumped. I'm very pumped. I think it's the first time we've ever just outright revealed what next episode is going to be. But yeah. I'm too excited. And it's the finale. It's special.
Yeah. It's the finale. So we hope you like it. Mm-hmm. We hope you're excited.
Mm-hmm.
We're excited. Hopefully we won't be so to the wire. But, you know, we'll see.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
It'll be on Friday.
Because I say it will be fine.
Yeah. Although I almost lost it last week because I edited the episode and then I scheduled it and I didn't hit save. So it was like Friday at midday when I checked and went, why is there no episode live?
Yeah, that's why it was a little bit late.
Yeah, if you noticed. If you'd like to listen to it on Friday morning, that was my fault. But it was fine. We still went out on Friday.
It's there now.
It's there now.
As the season is coming to a close, I would definitely encourage you to follow us either on our Instagram, which is at Genuinely Spooky, or over on our Facebook page. We have both. And that's where we're going to keep you updated on everything that's happening when season two is going to be released.
We thoroughly enjoyed making season one, so there's definitely going to be a season two.
Well, I mean, we already have a planned release date.
We do.
And we have episodes lined up, so...
We've got stuff.
You know. There's a lot to look forward to.
There is.
And do we announce it now?
Yeah.
We have a mini series of episodes that will be released before season two, so you won't have to wait so long.
Yeah, we do.
We have that coming up. So yep. You need to follow us somewhere so that you know when these are going to drop, because we won't be releasing the dates just yet.
No. And you can stay subscribed and it should come up on your podcast player.
Yes, yes. So make sure you're subscribed somewhere, otherwise you won't know.
I know. You'll miss out. The FOMO will hit and you'll be like, oh man.
I know.
Everyone's listening and I'm not.
You know, it's an Outlander thing that in between seasons the fans have Droughtlander. I thought you'd like that.
I did like that.
So we need one.
Generally Spooky Abyss.
That's not quite the same.
I was on demand. I had to resist because I made quite a lot of puns through your story.
You did.
That when Scotland were looking for an heir and they were coming together, I had to resist going, oh, were they all holding their breath? Because there was no air. That popped into my head. I was like, no, I can't. I can't just leave.
We're at the end.
I know.
You couldn't have held on?
No. I blew my beans.
Well, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. It really, really, really helps.
Yep. And if you know Sam Heughan, please tell him to get in contact.
Please ignore my husband. Rate, review, subscribe, share to your pal. Just anyone who will enjoy it, tell them. Mm-hmm. We're nice.
And for those of you who've been enjoying the intro-outro music, go check out Celestial Fury on Spotify.
Yes.
C-E-S-T-I-A-L. F-U-R-Y. Celestial Fury.
You just spelled Celestial.
Oh, did I? Celestial. What did Edna means? Spelling it in. Celestial Fury on Spotify.
Yes. He's amazing. He's our music. Super cool. And with that, we will speak to you next week for our season finale.
Adieu.
We're going to go and get a chippy.
Get a chipper.
Because we have a lot of work to do.
So we better get to it. Bye.
Bye.